Thank you, Frank. So welcome, one and all. And there are seats up here. And if somebody wants, you can have my seat, I guess, if you really want to. Come on up. We don't buy. So really today, I think this is another reference to the Dickens theme here. We're going to talk about reminders, past, present, and future. Really, that's what this is all about. Just a quick look at the way things have been done historically, but then to zoom ahead to the way things are currently done in practices. And then, importantly, looking ahead to where we can make some future enhancements for conducting reminders for immunizations. So before I begin, though, I do really want to thank my colleagues both here and back in Ann Arbor, Laura Harrington, who's here, who did a huge amount of work on the project I'm going to share with you now and the slides I'm presenting, Sarah Clark, David Hanauer, and certainly Allison Kennedy, who I believe is here someplace from the CDC, as well as the Department of Community Health, Michigan Department of Community Health and MICR team, and certainly our participating providers in the state of Michigan. So just a quick zoom back, looking back at registries and immunization notifications for reminders and recall. As you probably know, historically, telephone and postal mail, snail mail, if you will, have been the mainstay for years, actually probably over two decades. And you may also know that the U.S. Preventive Task Force on Preventive Services, rather, has indicated that both forms are very effective at increasing childhood immunization rates. They're very effective, so they're important. Now, the world turns. After 20 years, we don't just have postal mail and we don't have just telephone. We have email and text messaging, and that's how we all communicate with each other. And those certainly offer additional options in practices for communications. But quite frankly, there really is almost nothing known about those modalities for sending out reminders or recalls in the childhood immunization setting. So with that in mind, the remainder of my session is going to be looking ahead to the use of new technologies. And by that, I'm really meaning newer, like email or text messaging technologies for reminder notifications. So our objective was twofold. First, to assess provider technical capacity. Are they set up to do these sorts of notifications? And importantly, to summarize whether there's barriers out there amongst providers. We did so through a convenient sample of private and public immunization practices in South Central Michigan. We conducted our study using semi-structured interviews with both clinical and administrative staff. These interviews were done in person in some cases and via telephone in other cases. And just zooming ahead now to our results. We talked with 22 sites in South Central Michigan, 11 pediatric practices, 7 family medicine, 3 local health departments, and 1 FQHC. And just to start looking at the kind of information technology environment, practice management systems, as many of you are probably aware, it's the systems that conduct the business of practices, billing being the number one concern. And all the practices we talk to, in fact, use these systems for billing. All but one use those administrative systems for appointment scheduling. So the next few slides, I'm going to walk you through how these practices use various modalities for appointment reminders. First, I'll talk about appointment reminders, then I'll talk about immunization reminders. So kind of filling out the pie as we go around, we had 19 sites, the vast majority, 86% of the sites, did some sort of appointment reminders. Most are using, most of the, or the most common response was live telephone calls. That is to say, administrative staff taking that list of appointments for a couple days from now and just working their way through the list in their spare time. Live phone calls were conducted by 9 of the practices we talked with. Auto dialer calls, we had 5 practices using auto dialers, and by that I mean some sort of automatic system that will actually place the call and leave a message either on an answering machine or if a live person picks up, it'll send that message. These are not robocalls in the sense of a synthesized voice. It can be a human voice that's recorded. So we have 5 sites using that method, 4 using a combination of live phone and snail mail reminders, and then finally 1 site using only mail. Importantly, no sites were using text or email appointment reminders, so not a one of them. So now switching over to immunization reminders, we're going to walk through the same kind of look at the different modalities. Fewer sites, 9, were doing reminders in one fashion or another. We have 4 sites doing the live phone call, 4 using auto dialers, and 1 site using a combination, again, of that live phone and mail modality. Now, again, interestingly, no sites were using email for reminders, so none of that was going on currently. And equally interesting to me, 6 sites had begun collecting email addresses. So there's a fair amount of talk at some of these practices of, well, we thought it was important to start collecting email addresses, but we weren't really sure what to do with them, but we're collecting them anyway. And they don't know where to store them, and they don't know how to get them back to do anything with them, but they are collecting them. So that's kind of an interesting finding in its own right. But for text messaging, no sites were using text messaging at that point in time. And I think equally interesting was that all of the sites that were using autodialers, there's actually 5 different sites using autodialers for one type of reminder or another, all of those vendors actually provide text messaging capability. The exact same system can be used for texting, but basically nobody knew about it, which I thought was really interesting. So sketch out provider concerns, which is a big part of what we wanted to understand. What are those barriers out there? Practices concerns for text messaging and email messaging were in several areas. First, costs. We heard a lot about practices saying, well, we don't even know anything about these text or email systems. How do we get started? What do we need? Do we need to buy a computer? Do we have to pay somebody to maintain this thing? There's basically no understanding of what that involved. Equally concerning were parent preferences. If we started sending out these messages, would people get angry at us? I mean, like, are we spamming them or something? I mean, is this even allowable? Will they like it? And if so, how do we even keep track of, like, well, you want text messaging and you want email messaging? How do we even keep track of that information? There's a whole other kind of collection of concerns having to do with regulatory concerns. Many practices would pose the question, well, is this legal? I mean, can you do that? Can you put out a reminder on a text message or email modality within HIPAA, and is that allowable? And if so, like, what can you put in the message? Lots of questions. And then, of course, legal requirements. Well, like, if they are going to get a text message, do they need to opt in first, or can we just push those out? You know, there's this kind of concern about spamming people. And then kind of a broader question about, like, the whole email thing. Like, if I'm sending email messages to and from with patients, like what if something doesn't get picked up, and what if somebody doesn't get an important response, and am I legally liable, and these kinds of concerns. So before I leave this slide, I think it's safe to say there's a lot of concern about regulatory issues and really very few answers out there for these practices. So the next few slides, I'm going to walk you through several examples of messaging options that are available through the vendors that were being used in the practices that we were working with. My purpose here is to not necessarily promote one vendor versus another, so therefore I very cleverly disguise them as vendor A, B, C, and D. If you want to know who these vendors are afterward, I'm happy to tell you, but I just didn't want to make this like some sort of bake-off that so-and-so did it better than so-and-so. But what I really want to do is show you the richness of the diversity of different options that are out there here and now. These are available right now. So let's start with voice messaging or the auto dialers, as I refer to them. So that's kind of like, in a sense, it's almost kind of like old technology, but it's very commonly used, so I do want to walk through that. So all 4 vendors support voice messaging or auto dialing. All of those same systems will allow you to announce your practice name and give the callback number and so forth. 3 of the 4 allow you to leave a voicemail response. So in other words, when I call you, you can actually give some sort of indication of some sort of response back to the system. All 4 systems provide some sort of detailed report in terms of if the call was completed or not, got an answering machine or a live person, non-working number, busy signal, that sort of thing. There's a lot of detail for each and every phone number that's called. The length of the message varies pretty widely from 15 seconds on up to 2 minutes. I would not recommend a 2-minute message. And also the number of contacts. So if this thing's, and these systems really whip, I mean, they go through these numbers really fast, and so they call your number and it's busy, and then they're going to circle back around and call it again, and circle back around and call it again. Some of the systems will do that 3 times. Some will do it up to 10 times. So there's quite a bit of variation there. Switching over to text messaging again. All 4 of these same systems do allow text messaging that's available now. This is kind of, I think, stated backwards in a way, but no patient opt-in required. So in other words, 1 vendor required opt-in. That's probably the more straightforward way to say that. Patients can text an opt-out response. In other words, I don't want to hear from you again, quit. I can send that and it'll quit. Importantly, two of the vendors, that was not allowed. So in other words, I have to call the practice and say stop sending the text messages. Patients can text other responses back to the practice. That's allowed in one system. None of the systems will actually show text coming from the practice name per se. So it does not say ABC Pediatrics on it. And I'll show you an example of that. But so that's, I think, a little bit of an issue. And then only two of the vendors provide a detailed delivery report. Importantly, an SMS text message is 160 characters, as you may know. Some of the systems allow the full length of that message. Others are truncated because they have kind of a requirement for a footer message on there so that you don't get all the characters. Number of contact attempts, each of the systems just does it one time, and that's it. So let's talk about email. Only three of the systems supported email. All those systems had the same setup, which is no opt-in was required, so they can just start pushing out emails to patients for whom they have an email address. Patient can email an opt-out response was only available on one of the systems. Other type of information could be emailed back to the practice in two of the three systems. All of the systems provide some sort of identification of who's generating this email. So there's, you know, ABC Pediatrics or whatever can be right in the header. So that's pretty clear. None of them provide a delivery report, which I found to be rather amazing. But in other words, I can send out 500 email messages, but I have no idea which ones got there. So that's not a good feature, I don't think. And then the maximum number of contact attempts, just like with the text messaging, it's a one-shot deal. Either it works or it doesn't. And again, in this case, a little bit of a concern because I actually don't know if it worked, but they all got sent out. So one last thing, which is actually pertains to each of the three previous slides, the electronic interface to practice management systems, in other words, through HL7 connectivity, this one vendor basically will reach into your practice management system, pull out those appointments so that for 2 days from now it knows that you're scheduled for those appointments, or these patients are scheduled for those appointments, and then push out the desired reminders to them on an automatic basis. So there's one vendor that allows that, and it's being used by one of our practice sites. So let me just walk through exactly how this works. We have our EHR system or practice management system, we can conduct a query. Let's say we want to remind patients for appointments for Wednesday. So for 2 days from now, we're going to find all the patients who have an appointment. I do that query using the respective system, download the file, let's say to an Excel file, upload it to whichever vendor I'm working with, and they all work in a similar fashion. This is a drag and drop kind of a thing, where now I have this list of phone numbers for auto dialing or text messaging or email addresses. That gets uploaded. I go to the vendor system. I indicate when I want those messages to be sent, and away they go. And depending on which method I'm using, I get my report back indicating the success or lack thereof, depending on the particular numbers. But this is on a number by number or email by email address basis. So the contrast to that is the system I spoke of, which had these electronic linkages. I just wanted to let you know that basically you short-circuit the process by basically cutting out this manual querying, and it's just electronic. It's direct. It does it automatically, and it just churns along, sending out those email or text or auto-dial reminders that you've set up, and it's basically it's done automatically. So I just want to say a few words about our next steps for this project. We have assessed some of the barriers and technology that are out there at these practices. We're at a point now in this project where we're starting to conduct the pilot tests of, okay, where are we going to actually conduct a email or a text message reminder a pilot test? And really that revolves around parent preferences. Most of the sites would say, well, we don't actually know what our patients want, so we encourage them to ask, and that information is being collected right now and tallied right now to understand at your practice, your patients might want text messaging, and your practice may want emailing. That's what we're doing right now. Once we have that information together, we'll be working with our practices to send out some immunization or appointment reminders or both. So that's just happening these next few months, actually. So how does this work? The systems that I've described that send text messaging all work in this fashion where, you know, the text message, I'll use my example here where, if I can get my pointer, Just to point out that the reason or the way that the patient would know it's coming from us, here's our fake practice, Time Pediatrics. If I didn't put that there, the only identification would be down at the bottom, which is it's coming from 71599, which probably makes as much sense to you as it does to me, which is you wouldn't know who that is. So in your 160 characters, you've got to say a lot. You know, you're due for something. Here's who's contacting you. Here's how you contact us. And here's how you stop or opt out. Here's some example. I just want to give you a couple email examples. There's a variety of options. This one obviously includes images or graphics or whatever. You can do that. Links to websites, Facebook, those can be embedded in those messages. Similar, you know, just a text version. Again, these are generated. These are actually generated by the vendors that we're working with. So these are the real deal. One last thing to say. You may be interested in social networking, not the focus of my talk today, but let it suffice to say it's being used out there. It was used pretty widely during the flu season. It's much better at kind of general announcement type stuff. So rather than me talking to you, it's more like, okay, the practice has flu clinics coming up next week, that sort of thing. Okay. So I do want to mention a couple things. One, CDC has a lot of good information out there. I included a couple links in my talk so that you can go to the slides and if you want, connect with these websites to get CDC's guidance on social media use and kind of best practices. There's a lot out there. But I might add, not a lot in there about legal and regulatory issues, the same questions that the practices have. I don't think that's in here. So from our work, we conclude that pediatric immunization providers currently rely primarily on telephone and postal mail for reminders. I think that's safe to say. But the capacity exists for expansion into text messaging or email notification. So those capabilities are available here and now. There are perceived barriers to using text messaging or email reminders, which really revolve largely around legal or regulatory concerns. And we believe that guidance to immunization providers on these issues could really facilitate the use of these technologies for reminder messaging. So in my last couple minutes here, I want to talk a little bit about new horizons. In the plenary talk this morning, Dr. Sukit really set me up for this because, the world is turning and it continues to turn, obviously, every day, and technology is really changing. And that really does apply to immunization information systems and how we do these reminders. So things don't sit still for very long. So it's a quiz time. So if you're tired already, it's okay. This is going to be a very, very easy quiz. So it's like a matching game. You can do this like with your kids, okay? So these are real live practices that we go visit. And so here's what we have to do. What does this practice have in common with this practice, which has in common with that practice? And when things fill up upstairs, when the upstairs gets full, they go downstairs. I love that one. And so really, I think you get the drift is that, for all the years we've been doing this, paper has been, king. It's just everything's paper-oriented. And there's been so much in terms of manual processes, not exclusively, but I think you get the idea. There's a lot of that. So there's a lot of data trapped in this paper, but, as they say, limited information. But the times are changing. And so, given us the ERA Act of 2009 and the huge amount of money that has been aimed at modernizing immunization technology or information technology systems throughout healthcare, it really is pushing now, right now as we speak, promoting the adoption of health information technology in practices. And that really does affect immunization information systems quite directly. I'd like to suggest that the incentives, the electronic health record incentives that are out there are really going to make a big difference in the way that we think of immunization information systems as time goes on. And these criteria for meaningful use, which were mentioned this morning, I think certainly there's the push for achieving meaningful use to get the incentive payments, but it's important with respect to how immunization information is going to be used. I do include some links here so you can become expert on this, and so you can go to my talk up on the web and make those linkages if you want. But the thing I'd like to conclude with is just the criteria in the meaningful use criteria, rather, which specifically speak to immunizations. There is one criterion that's submitting data electronically to immunization registry, which is pretty obviously related to IAS. There's also reminders for patients in preventive follow-up care, which is another criterion directly related to what we're talking about here. I would like to submit, as was mentioned this morning, that these and other forces will really push ahead this electronic health record IAS linkage, and that's not just pushing information up to the registry, which has really been so much of our focus these years, but it's actually going to start turning it back around, and there's going to be this bidirectionality, and that's going to be a really, really big deal. So real-time bidirectional EHR linkages, I believe, have big impact. Providers can be informed by the IAS, this kind of hub that's floating around out there, of doses that were reported by other providers. So I'm sitting there, kid comes in, and I now will have the ability to know through my EHR from the registry that this kid got a flu vaccine last week at the health department. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. Those IAS will provide the EHR with vaccination assessment results potentially, and potentially get involved with the sharing of updated contact information and preferences. So again, if you want text messaging and you want email messaging or you've moved to that address, all that's got to go somewhere. It's likely going to be in the practice management system, which can then potentially talk to the registry. Again, these are conceptual ideas. They haven't all been worked out, but the technology exists, really. I think the regulatory issues are some of the barriers at this point. So with that, I will conclude by pointing to my colleague's poster, which is very related to this. Sarah Clark has a poster tomorrow, Communication Modes for Immunization Reminder Recall, Parent Experience and Preferences. The reason I mention that is what I was really sharing with you this morning focused on provider practices. We did a national survey of parents to understand what do they want. And so rather than stealing her thunder, I'd say go to poster 25, 45, and find out what parents want. So with that, I will conclude. Thank you very much.